You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Welcome back to the show. Second hour now upon us. Is the mindset of white people truly beginning to change for the better? We explored that question with Kevin McDonald in the first hour. Jared Taylor will be with us this hour to pinpoint exactly why it could be happening. But before we go to Jared live, Jared prepared for American Renaissance a video tackling this exact topic. We're going to listen to this clip, and then we're going to go to Jared to have him offer us a further and more detailed explanation.
There are stirrings in the white community. The white community? Yes, we finally seem to have one, as ordinary folks begin to wake up to just what race means in this country. The spark has been critical race theory. This is the idea that all white people, and especially white men, are inherent oppressors, and that we make life miserable for everyone else, whether we want to or not. Our ancestors set up an implacably white supremacist system that lathers us with unearned privilege from the moment we are born. Therefore, it's our moral duty to spend our lives tearing down this system. But no matter how hard we try, we will never be innocent of racism because we're white. People didn't pay much attention to this nonsense while it was being cooked up in the universities, but people get annoyed when the stuff gets pumped into their children's classrooms. In Cupertino, California, third graders had to rank themselves on which parts of their identities had power and privilege. At the top, of course, was the trump card, being white, but being cisgendered is right up there. Third graders are supposed to know that you are an oppressor if you were born a boy and still think you are one. Last year, TV personality Megyn Kelly helped get the ball rolling when she pulled her sons from a woke Upper West Side school after it posted an anti-white letter to parents. It said things like, "There is a killer cop sitting in every school where white children learn." It also said, "I am tired of white people reveling in their state-sanctioned depravity, snuffing out black life with no consequences." This was at Collegiate School in Manhattan, which charges $56,000 a year. There is now a growing underground network of parents fighting anti-racism in New York City. This guy, Harvey Goldwyn, was shelling out $43,000 a year to the Heschel School in Manhattan until he learned that it was teaching his daughter that all white people have white privilege. As he wrote, "Suggesting I do is insulting. Suggesting to my 9-year-old child she does is child abuse, not education." Parents at the Brearley School in Manhattan, $54,000 a year, went into revolt when they learned you had to sign an anti-racism pledge just to apply. They had to agree to take anti-racist training and spend their days in ongoing reflection if their child were admitted. Even lefties are sick of this. Maud Maron is a public defender with children in the New York public schools. She says critical race theory is a really divisive, ugly orthodoxy, and it's a multi-million dollar industry as well. She adds, "It's also very insidious, because on the face of it, who wouldn't want to sign up to be less racist?" But the biggest victory on this front was just last Saturday in South Lake, Texas, where whites won a clean sweep in local elections on a single issue, fighting critical race theory. South Lake, just northwest of Dallas, has a school district that got caught up in the hysteria over George Floyd and issued what it called a cultural competence action plan. It was 34 pages of the usual waffle. It used the word diversity 104 times. Parents immediately set up the Southlake Families PAC to fight it. They poured into school board meetings to denounce diversity police and discrimination against white children. Even more important, they ran candidates for 2 open school board seats, 2 city council seats, and the mayor's office. Of course, they got the usual treatment. Some Pop-Tart named Demi Lovato, whose opinions apparently matter to someone, raged that parents in Southlake, Texas are literally fighting to uphold white supremacy. The local Democrat Party called all 5 candidates racists. Well, every one of the racists won, with a crushing 70% or so of the vote. That was the end of the road for critical race theory at Southlake, and it shows what the community can do with a little organization. There's been a similar fight in Loudoun County, Virginia, which is the richest county in the country with a median household income of $142,000 a year. Parents got angry when schools started warning that Dr. Seuss books had dangerous racial messages, and when they learned that the district had dropped $500,000 on a diversity consulting bunch called Equity Collaborative. It claims it can create educational equity and social justice by addressing bias and oppression. Parents and teachers didn't think that there was $500,000 worth of bias and oppression in the schools. Monica Hill, who teaches AP government, said, "We're told that we're living in a country that's suffering from systemic racism, and I think that that whole notion has done nothing but damage our community and our school." But some teachers were all for anti-racist propaganda. Last month, Andrea Weisskopf attended a meeting wearing a Black Students Matter shirt and complained that parents who don't want critical race theory have put their racism on display. She was talking about a group called PACT, or Parents Against Critical Theory, which has started a recall campaign against anyone who supports CRT. The anti-racism fanatics drew up an enemies list and promised to silence the opposition, that is, parents who don't want their children indoctrinated. The CRT boosters put out a call for hackers to shut down the PACT website, expose the people behind it, and drag them through the mud. The people who oppose critical race theory call these maniacs the Chardonnay Antifa. I think that's a pretty good name. And have officially complained to the Loudoun County Sheriff's Office. The Battle of Loudoun is not yet over, but whites are putting up a terrific fight. State legislatures are battling this nonsense too. Idaho has passed a law to ban critical race theory in public schools, and prospects look good for similar laws in Iowa, Louisiana, Missouri, Oklahoma, Rhode Island, and West Virginia. On May 5th, the Tennessee State House voted to ban public schools from teaching critical race theory. Every black voted against the ban. They want anti-white propaganda in public schools. I've always said that as the left made ever more outrageous demands on whites, it would wake people up.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, there he is, Jared Taylor, a recent video posted to Amron.com. We're going to get him to break it down even further when he joins us live next. Stay tuned. Jared Taylor coming your way on TPC.
Scott Bradley here. Most Americans are painfully aware that the nation is on the wrong track and in dire straits. Unfortunately, most political pundits only nibble around the edges when they claim to address the issues. Even worse, many of the so-called solutions are simply rewarmed servings of what got us into the mess we currently face. And the politicians think we're so gullible and naive that we'll buy their lies that they have reformed and now understand where they led us astray. Unfortunately, the truth of the matter is that they simply wish to continue to hold power. The solution to America's challenges is found in returning to the timeless principles found in the United States Constitution. My book and lecture series will reawaken in Americans an understanding and love of the principles which made this nation the freest, most prosperous, happiest, and most respected nation on earth. Visit topreservethenation.com and order my book and lectures to begin the restoration of this great nation.
Okay, girls, about finished with your lesson on money?
Daddy, what is a buy-sell spread for gold coins?
Well, when you sell a gold coin to a coin shop that's worth, say, $1,200, you don't actually get $1,200. But don't worry, we're members of UPMA now, so we don't have to worry about that.
Daddy, what if somebody steals our gold?
We don't have any gold at the house. It's stored safely in the UPMA vault, securely and insured.
But the S&P 500 outperformed gold. Daddy, gold is a bad investment.
Some people do think of it that way, but actually, gold is money. And as members of the United Precious Metals Association, we can use our gold at any store, just like a credit card. Or I can ask them to drop it right into Mommy and Daddy's bank account, because we're a UPMA member family. Find out more at upma.org. That's upma.org.
Why don't we say to the government writ large that they have to spend a little bit less? Anybody ever had less money this year than you had last? Anybody better have a 1% pay cut? You deal with it. That's what government needs, a 1% pay cut. If you take a 1% pay cut across the board, you have more than enough money to actually pay for the disaster relief. But nobody's going to do that because they're fiscally irresponsible. Who are they? Republicans. Who are they? Democrats. Who are they? Virtually the whole body is careless and reckless with your money. So the money will not be offset by cuts anywhere. The money will be added to the debt, and there will be a day of reckoning. What's the day of reckoning? The day of reckoning may well be the collapse of the stock market. The day of reckoning may be the collapse of the dollar. When it comes, I can't tell you exactly, but I can tell you it has happened repeatedly in history when countries ruin their currency.
Get on the show and speak with James and the gang. Call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And now, back to tonight's show.
Welcome back, everybody, for the live broadcast of this Saturday evening. May the 29th, it is Memorial Day weekend, and boy, have we put a dynamic duo in front of you this evening with Kevin McDonald in the first hour. Now we go to Jared Taylor, our good friend, who is, of course, the editor of American Renaissance at amren.com, a prolific author. He's returning to the program this evening, to further examine the question we have been exploring tonight. And that question is whether or not there are positive stirrings amongst the men of the West. Jared, great to have you. Always great to have you. Great to have you tonight.
Oh, it's a pleasure and an honor. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Well, you're very welcome, my friend. Thank you for the work that you do and for being with us and our audience yet again. So, I guess this is a continuation of a conversation we started last week with Brad Griffin of Occidental Descent, where we were exploring some of his findings, the post-Trump trends within the Republican base, which I guess is a euphemism for the white community here in America to a large degree. And Brad has posted since then an article at his website that basically recaps the discussion, and it includes 20 points that he designates as indicators of why, in fact, whites here in America may be beginning to make a turn for the better. You explored this in a fantastic video that we just played in its entirety in the previous segment, and that's, I believe it was entitled Positive Stirrings in the White Community. Jared, we just listened to it. What could you add to it?
Well, I would certainly add that I find this tremendously encouraging. And I think one of the most encouraging things that happened was what happened in South Lake, Texas, where you had a school district that was all woke, and they were going to try to cram critical race theory down the throats of all the children. And people got angry. People got very, very angry, and they put together the South Lake Families PAC, and there were five open seats to run in the local elections. There were two school board seats and two city council seats, and the mayor. And they won every one of them. They swept every open seat. because they organized. And, of course, the Democrats called all of these five candidates racists, but they won by an average of about 70% of the vote. This is something that I have been urging wide-awake white people to do for years. I think the time is absolutely ripe, and it's ripening all the time, for people to put together an attractive campaign that says, hold on, we as white people are getting the shaft. And of course, you'd have to judge your issues locally, you'd have to be careful, and it would probably not be a good idea if somebody like me, with a long past, came out and did something like this. But look at what happened there. Now, this is very inspiring to me, but this is purely defensive action. And defensive action is clearly not enough. We have to have organizations like these people, And to me, I think it's very significant that they just brushed off the charges of racism. They said, the hell with this. And I think the fact of trying to ensure that their children are not told right there in school that they are wicked people and they are to blame for slavery, they're to blame for segregation, hell, the hell with that. No, they're not. And to be called racist for saying that, I hope that will wake them up and send them our way.
Well, Jared, this was, of course, I watched your video on this issue when you first published it to American Renaissance. I guess it was about a week or two ago. Of course, I just listened to it again as we played it live on the radio just a few minutes ago. But that, to me, was, I think, the most striking thing, that these people were able to run. And I can't say for the first time, but certainly it's not a common occurrence yet where people will run, will not apologize once they start hurling the R word at them. But even more importantly than that, they actually win. And that's what happened in that school board election. And then, of course, you know, I wrote a book 11 years ago this summer, which could, if you asked me to sum it up in one sentence, the modern day definition of a racist is a white person. Fast forward 11 years later, the issues I was detailing in the book at that time are child's play to what we see on a nearly daily basis now with regards to the sheer absurdity of the allegations. And I think this all leads to, perhaps, I hope, the R word losing its sting. Do you think it's beginning to lose the sting when everyone from the sitting president or the then sitting president, Donald Trump, is a Nazi and a white supremacist? Really, I think it starts to lose a little bit of its potency.
I agree 100%, and that is why it seems to me the other side has upped the ante. They don't call us racists anymore. They call us white supremacists, as if we were slave drivers or trying to get up a lynch party or something. It is a desperate, desperate way to try to make any white person who does not bow down and kiss the toe of every designated minority into somebody evil. And I think that is beginning to lose its sting. The same thing happened in the Virginia county right next door to mine, Loudoun County. The fight is still going on, but the school board decided, oh, we're going to have critical race theory. We're going to have all these little white kids made to feel guilty and list all the reasons why they're privileged. And the parents said, the hell you are. And the most astonishing thing about that is then there was this counter group of people who got together and tried to find out the people who were opposed to critical race theory in the schools and dox them. And this got a certain amount of publicity, and the people have pulled back. I don't think they're going to get CRT, critical race theory, in the Loudoun public schools because people stood up and said, the hell with this. And it's encouraging to me the number of state legislatures that are voting to ban this. Again,
right here in Tennessee,
Yes, Tennessee is one. Oklahoma, Idaho, those three states have already passed legislation that says no way. And there are now about a dozen states where it's really making its way through the legislature in a very positive way. I'll just list them: Arizona, Texas, Louisiana, Florida, North Carolina, Missouri. And the Southerners are leading the way. And then there is West Virginia, Iowa, South Dakota, New Hampshire, and Rhode Island. Even New Hampshire, South Dakota. Those people are waking up. And I think there are very good prospects for all of these states to pass these laws. Now,
Quick interjection. You also mentioned in your video, speaking of schools, state legislatures, what happened in Loudoun County is obviously very encouraging, but I was equally encouraged to see some of these bougie people with spending $60,000 to send their kids to grade school in New York, speaking out to the extent where it made national news, and they never did take their hand off the throttle.
But I think it is very, very encouraging that they are fighting back. And there is a woman running for city council. She is a real lefty. She's a one-time public defender. Maude Marin is her name. I talked about her. She calls this a divisive, ugly orthodoxy, and she's running for the city council. We'll see what happens. So, people are waking up, and people are coming out of the closet. Even there was this guy who had his kid in some kind of fancy Jewish school. And Jews are very frequently behind all of this stuff. But once it turns against them and they're accused of white privilege, they start waking up. This guy writes to the Jewish school and he says, look, telling my daughter that she had a fourth grade or fifth grade, that she's got white privilege is child abuse, and telling me I've got a white privilege is insulting. So all of this is just great. Now, for years, I have been saying that the left has overplayed its hand. They're pushing as far as we can go, and it looks maybe we're reaching that point.
Well, we're going to continue again, ladies and gentlemen, to explore. Good news? Are we talking about good news, positive trends? That's a switch. But I think we are, and we're doing it with the best of the best, Jared Taylor. Stay tuned. He'll be right back.
Proclaiming liberty across the land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Lance Pry.
As the Defund the Police movement is being pushed by lawmakers, violent crime in major U.S. cities is spiraling out of control. Murders are up 22% in New York City, up 50% in Atlanta, and murders are up 800% in Portland, Oregon. White House spokesperson Jen Psaki puts the blame on violent crime on the Trump White House.
There's actually been a rise in crime over the course of the last year since the start of the pandemic, which actually predates President Biden taking office. We're focused on solutions here, and that's why we proposed putting $5 billion in the American Jobs Plan to help address community violent intervention programs, to help fund them. That's also why we fought for funding for state and local governments in the rescue plan, something many opposed. There was a lot of Republican opposition to that. That's helped keep cops on the beat and other public servants.
USA Radio News.
Recently, Facebook announced its ban on former President Trump, but promised to review the ban in 6 months. Now, Newsmax wants to know if you think Trump should be back on Facebook. Vote in Newsmax's national poll and let us know your opinion. Just text the word North to 39747. That's North to 39747. It takes just seconds. Make your voice heard. We'll share poll results with the 30 million people who watch Newsmax TV. Forbes calls Newsmax a news powerhouse. It's already the fourth largest cable news channel in America, with great recent guests like Donald Trump, Mike Huckabee, Franklin Graham, John Voight, Alan Dershowitz, Ron DeSantis, Nikki Haley, Mike Pompeo, and so many more. Newsmax is on all major cable systems. If your cable company doesn't carry Newsmax, call them. Tell them you want Newsmax or you can switch. So vote now in the Newsmax poll on Facebook's Trump ban. Just text North to 39747. Let Newsmax and America know your opinion.
More than one-third of the United States population is unprepared for retirement, a new poll by Technometrica Institute of Policy and Politics found. A total of 36% of Americans do not have savings earmarked for retirement, and 38% plan to work beyond the age of 65. The percentage of people without retirement savings is highest among those earning less than $30,000 a year. The poll was conducted in April and did not disclose how many people were questioned. Reuters is reporting President Biden has decided to use imported metals to build electric vehicles in the United States. It's part of a plan to pacify environmentalists, two administration officials with direct knowledge told Reuters. In a follow-up, a suspicious package delivered to the home of U.S. Senator Rand Paul on Monday and reported to law enforcement had a powdery substance was found not to be dangerous in preliminary analysis. Tuesday, during an interview, Senator Rand Paul, the Republican from Kentucky, says he's tired of the double standard applied to the political right compared to the left on threats and violence. USA Radio News.
Here comes the sun, doo doo doo. Here comes the sun, and I say it's all right. Little darling, it's been a long, cold, lonely winter. Little darling, it feels like years since it's been here. Here comes the sun, doo 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 doo. Here comes the sun, and I say, it's all right.
Well, the idea, ladies and gentlemen, that we might be approaching a corner to turn certainly is a welcomed thing. Is the sun beginning to return to the West? We continue to talk about that with Jared Taylor. And I just want to make mention of the fact that it has really been and continues to be such an honor, really, outside of my wife and children, the very pride of my life to be able to serve in a cause greater than ourselves and to be able to serve in a struggle, to struggle with men like Jared Taylor, like Sam Dixon, who was on last week, Kevin McDonald earlier tonight. It really is something to commit yourself to a greater cause and to be able to do it with some of the best men, the best men I've ever met in my life. So, Jared, talking about the psychological conditions we were with Kevin in the first hour that got us into this place where we've been for the last several decades, we've talked about this support being a mile wide and an inch thick. I was talking about that in the first hour. I do believe that when conditions are favorable to have our ideas again, ideas that are so logical and based and rooted in common sense, that it's going to be easier to get people to go back along with us. I think that, unfortunately, it is going to have to be trendy and a path to prosperity before people will widely do it. What is encouraging, though, is to see people doing it when everything is still against us. Paul Craig Roberts has been a guest on this program, we quote him from time to time, former Assistant Secretary of the Treasury under Ronald Reagan. He wrote just last week, "Anti-White Ideologues have control of the school systems, universities, Hollywood, social media, print, TV media, corporations, book publishing, and the United States military. And they are using these powerful institutions to demonize white Americans. White Americans are being moved aside and have set by while a handful of far-left people stole their country." Now, all that's true, Jared. Look, we're not going to look at this through rose-colored lenses. We're not suggesting as if the Great Awakening has occurred and we can all go home. Obviously, if the game ended today, we'd lose. But perhaps we'll be like Moses. We might not see the mountaintop ourselves, but maybe we can lead our people or help lead our people to the valley. So still a lot of things that need to happen, but is it misplaced enthusiasm to say, hey, even though things are still very, very wrong and there's so much more work needs to be done, is it okay to invest a little bit of hope, Jared, right now?
Yes, yes, I certainly do. You mentioned Hunter Wallace's column at Occidental Descent, and as you point out, he lists a number of important trends, and those are all well worth considering, and I think they are reasons for hope. And this is something else that I've said. Thank you for talking about what a great and fulfilling thing it is to be part of something that we know is honorable, true, and represents the best of ourselves and our civilization. And from that point of view, we have a duty to press forward no matter what. And it's harder to press forward when things look cloudy, but when the gleams of light begin to break through, yes, by all means, we should never, ever give up the struggle. As you say, the fight's not over. And all of these are very encouraging trends. I will point out something else that happened. Again, this is a defensive action, but this was at Cambridge University. They had one of their usual, okay, racists are only white people, nobody else can be racist, and they put this policy up, and students and faculty said, the hell with this, and they took it down for reevaluation. We don't know what's going to happen, but not everybody is taking this lying down. And as you know, the French, Macron, he said, none of this BLM stuff for France. We're not taking down any of our monuments. This is sick American nonsense. We're not doing it. And it was very encouraging to me. I don't know if you've spoken about this on your show, but the 20 retired generals in France, as well as many hundreds of other retired officers, they said, look, unless you stand up to Islam, there could be civil war. There are people waking up all around the world. And I think we're absolutely right to take hope. Of course, there will be setbacks. We're fighting very close to the, if we're a football game, we're fighting on our 2-yard line, but I think we've got some momentum.
Well, I think we do. And again, we're trying to be real while also being encouraging. I don't think there's a contradiction in those two things tonight. No. Nothing concrete has changed. We have no illusions of that. But is the mindset? The mindset has to change before other things can change. And is the mindset of whites changing? I think there is evidence to that effect. We mentioned the Occidental Descent piece, obviously Jared's video, and that gives you a little bit of examples of what we're talking about here. And even with Trump out of office, I believe it was Buchanan who wrote this recently, things seem to be trending more in his direction within the Republican Party. The GOP establishment is still there. And I think, of course, Jared, that they would love to take advantage of the backlash to this completely out of control. I mean, even by so-called progressive standards, they have completely gone off the rails, I think, for the vast majority of the country. I'm sure that the rapidly changing Republican Party, there is still an element of the old guard represented by Mitch McConnell. They would love nothing more than to accept this backlash and return to business as usual. But even within the Republican Party, you've had, and we've mentioned this a couple of times, people like sitting Congressman Paul Gozer out of Arizona, who recently attended a conference put on by Nick Fuentes. So how likely do you think it is that the complete sacking of the Republican Party, because you are seeing the removal of people like Liz Cheney, you are seeing a shift, a realignment of the Republican base in a way that it is actually affecting the leadership of the party now. Do you think they'll be able to continue that in the midterms?
I think they will. I think they will. I think that certainly the people who win nominations in the primaries, they are going to have to appeal to Republicans who are hopping mad. And if they win, and that's always a question, they will reinforce those within the Republican Party who say business as usual is no damn good. And take a woman like Marjorie Taylor Greene, no relation, but she has, in the face of a calumny campaign that almost matches what the media cooked up for Donald Trump, she has held firm, and she has withstood all of that, and she's going in guns blazing. She's not apologizing for anything. Now, she's not necessarily talking about all of the issues that we talk about, but I love the fact that she is standing up and saying, well, I won't even pronounce these words on a child-friendly program, but she is telling them to sit down and shut up. All of these are wonderful signs, and I think that, if you look for signs of even more radical thinking, I don't know if you're familiar with a website called The Federalist. It publishes a lot of pretty mainstream conservatives, professors in universities. Ted Cruz has written for it, and there was an article just the other day, and it was called Here's When the American Founders Thought Revolution Was Justified. It's written by a professor at Hillsdale College, and he says, the Declaration of Independence is very clear. When any form of government becomes destructive to the ends of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, it's the right of the people to alter or abolish it and institute a new government. That's pretty good, straightforward stuff. How often has a mainstream website or publication pointed out, hey, look, fellas, you don't like the government? Is it not serving you the way it should? It's your right to overthrow, abolish it, and bring in a new one. I was very encouraged by that.
That is actually pretty strong stuff, especially by the Federalists. And I was mentioning that earlier in the program tonight. My loyalty, first, second, and third, is to my people, to my nation. As long as my nation, my people, can survive, I don't care what you call the community. You can call it the United States of America. I don't care what form of government we've got, as long as it's working in our best interest. We can. All of that is negotiable. What is not negotiable is our survival and our continuance as a distinct race. And because yes. If the light goes out in Western civilization, I hate to tell everyone this, but it's going to go out for everyone. It's going to go out in the whole world. So we've got to make sure that doesn't happen. And we've got one more segment with Jared Taylor. We're going to continue to talk about this, of course, but also talk a little bit more about the inner goings of the Republican Party. He mentioned Marjorie Taylor Greene. We'll pick up there. Stay tuned.
Let's hang on and come back to the political cesspool right after these messages here on the Liberty News Radio Network.
You know where the solution can be found, Mr. President? In churches, in wedding chapels, in maternity wards across the country and around the world. More babies will mean forward-looking adults, the sort we need to tackle long-term, large-scale problems. American babies in particular are likely going to be wealthier, better educated, and more conservation-minded than children raised in still industrializing countries. As economist Tyler Cowen recently wrote, quote, by having more children, you're making your nation more populous, thus boosting its capacity to solve climate change. The planet does not need for us to think globally and act locally so much as it needs us to think family and act personally. The solution to so many of our problems, at all times and in all places, is to fall in love, get married, and have some kids.
Have we realized the assault against our lives, our liberties, our faith? To defeat this assault, Christians and all people of goodwill should have strategies to prevail in our faith and principles, which are simple. No need for a complex formula. One goal, one aim. A strategy like the heroic Christians of the past. We win, they lose. Nothing less. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm by a friend of Medjugorje. The strategy of heaven revealed. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm. Available on Amazon.com or by calling Caritas in the U.S. at 205-672-2000.
The Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit legal foundation committed to protecting our unalienable right to publicly acknowledge God. The Foundation for Moral Law exists to restore the knowledge of God in law and government and to acknowledge and defend the truth that man is endowed with rights not by our fellow man, but by God. The foundation maintains a twofold focus. First, litigation within state and federal courts. Second, education, conducting seminars to teach the necessity and importance of acknowledging God in law and government. How can you help? Please make a tax-deductible contribution, allowing foundation attorneys to continue the fight. You may also purchase various foundation products as well at morallaw.org. Located in Montgomery, Alabama, the Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit, tax-exempt 501c3, founded by Judge Roy Moore. Please partner with us to achieve this important mission. morallaw.org.
Get on the show, call us on James's dime at 1-866-986-6397.
What a fast 2 hours it's already been, and it's always that way when you have the likes of Kevin McDonald and Jared Taylor on your radio. Amren.com, I'm there right now. Support the work of Jared Taylor, and don't forget to check out the incredible lineup that's already taking place. The American Renaissance Annual Conference is back right here in Tennessee later this year. It's been pushed to November this year, so it's a little bit off its regular annual schedule, what with COVID and all, but you've got a lineup there that looks like the lineup you'd hear any given night here on TPC, of course, with the man himself, Jared Taylor, Sam Dixon, Peter Brimelow, and David Cole. David Cole, now that is a character. I was actually talking with David just a couple of days ago. We're going to get him back on the show soon. He was on with us last fall for a wonderful run, and we're working on a project behind the scenes that I'll tell you more about in the weeks to come, David Cole and I. Great lineup. Check it out and bookmark the date, November 12th through the 14th near Nashville. Amren.com is where it's at. And hopefully, Jared, by the time that conference arrives, there'll be even more good news to celebrate. And that has been, of course, the topic of the evening. I guess if Trump left something behind for a lot of people, it would be, don't apologize. And that was one thing he never did. For all the ups and downs he had and the thrills and the disappointments that he gave us, he never once apologized, even amidst all the name-calling. And I think that's begun to rub off. And, of course, that's just to a natural effect of when everybody's a racist, no one's a racist type of thing. But you're seeing more and more pushback, Jared. Tulsi Gabbard even just this week condemned the mayor of Chicago for anti-white racism. She actually used that term, anti-white racism. Rick Santorum, who's certainly not one of our guys on the core issues, but he took a sacking for speaking the truth with regards to the minimal impact to American culture that the Amerindians had given us, and I haven't heard that he apologized. But with what's going on in the Republican Party, I was asking you this before the last break. I'm sure the diminishing old guard of the Republican Party would love to take advantage of this backlash and return to business as usual, tax cuts and really nothing on the core issues of the base, immigration and so on and so forth. But you do have these people coming in, and even people who have been there for a while, like Gozer out of Arizona. You mentioned Marjorie Taylor Greene. Lauren Boebert is another one. I mean, Lauren Boebert was a woman out of, now a congresswoman out of Colorado. I think she worked at a diner before she was elected, a shooting range type of cafeteria, a snack bar. And then you have Lauren Witzke, who we were talking with Lauren just last week. A lot of it comes down to, of course, timing and circumstances. You can have the best ideas and everything just be spot on, but sometimes the timing has to work in your favor. Also, location. I mean, I can't think of anyone better suited to represent our ideas than you, Jared, in a congressional run. Unfortunately, you're up in Northern Virginia, so that would make that a little bit tougher. If Lauren Witzke had run, for instance, in Mississippi, we would be referring to her as Senator Witzke today. And I'll tell you why that is. I mean, Mississippi just elected Cindy Hyde Smith to represent its state in the United States Senate. And I mean, she's okay, but she's basically, I mean, she's nothing to get excited about. She certainly doesn't talk in the ways that these other people are talking about. And in Mississippi, of course, you've got Mississippi, 90% of the whites that vote in the state of Mississippi vote GOP. It's the highest margin in the entire nation. So again, a candidate like that wins in a location like that. A little bit tougher to win in Delaware. Anyway, all that being said, small money donations. A lot of the corporations have left the Republican Party, Jared. Small money donations are coming in, and that is another reason why the Republican Party is more receptive to the people now.
Yes, you said that the old chieftains of the Republican Party would like to get back to business as usual. It's too late. It's too late. The barn door is wide, wide open, and all the horses are continuing to stream out of it. You said that Donald Trump did a very important thing. Never back down. Stick to your guns. The other tremendously important thing he did was bring the other side out from under its flat rocks. It became so clear how full of hate and resentment they are, and ultimately full of contempt for America and whites and ordinary citizens. All that became so clear that I think that conservative whites and even just ordinary whites are motivated like never before. At the same time, more and more people, but with COVID, but with the election, but with all of this stuff about critical race, more and more people have turned their back on the mainstream media. And that's why I think when you get a candidate in a local election or a congressional election who says stuff that the media absolutely hate and the media react in the typical way they do, the voters say, I don't care what the media say. I can't trust them on anything else anyway. I'm going to go with my instincts. I'm going to go the way I feel, and I'm going to go vote for this white woman or this white man who is going to represent my interests. I think that there's been a real sea change. And something else that I can tell you that's very encouraging. As you know, all of our attempts to reach people have been blocked, YouTube, Twitter, et cetera, et cetera. And even when the search engines, Deep Six, our websites, let me tell you, our website, our traffic continues to grow. Imagine what it would be like if we had a level playing field. And the more unreasonable bans having to do with the vaccines or COVID or the election, the more people get kicked off of the conventional platform for whatever reason, they will come to the alternative platforms. I see them growing all the time. Now, we're going to end up with a divided country, but that is what we have, and the more clearly divided it is, the better, because the clearer the issues become.
Well, you know, Jared, I borrow something from you that I use in interviews, and it was something, a quote I picked up from you: the history of race relations can be summed up in one word, and that word is conflict. And there is nothing to suggest that anything pertaining to that truth has changed. In fact, quite the opposite is true. And so it is good. It is good. If you have to be divided, it's good that everybody sees things the way they are. And I think that that is increasingly happening. And we will see where this goes. But well, let me ask you this. Over the course of the last, I mean, certainly you could go back far enough to where things were better, but let's just say since 2000, would you think we're better off today as a people, or were we better off 20 years ago?
That's an interesting question. 20 years ago, the dividing lines were not so clear, and it seems to me the left was nibbling away. Not even just nibbling away, devouring away at our culture in a way to which there was very little resistance. Now they've nibbled a whole lot more, but they've gotten to the point where ordinary, sensible people are saying, no, that's enough. You've gone too far. That is a real difference. You could say objectively we have lost ground, but at the same time, I think you can objectively say we are beginning to fight back. And let me give you, before this segment ends, let me give you another example of fighting back, and that is the Greater Idaho Project. I don't know if you've discussed that with your listeners, but this is a group of people.
Yes, no, we haven't, but it's a good topic.
Yes, there are a number of counties in the state of Oregon that want to detach themselves from that crazy, crazy Democrat-controlled state government and attach themselves to Idaho so that Idaho would become a larger state. It would have a Pacific coastline. And this is, I think, a very sensible and reasonable demonstration of how we have to separate. In America, we have irreconcilable differences. You can draw them in a number of lines, but red state, blue state, I think white people, non-white people, these irreconcilable differences are becoming so clear that people are talking in terms of a divorce. These Oregonians say, look, we can't live in this state. We want to join Idaho. We want to be with our people. And every expression that represents our people, whether it's explicitly racial or not, to me, opens the door to something that is really about our people.
That's a fantastic point. And, of course, Portland would be the greatest example you could set of just – I don't know. I mean, here as Southerners, but yes, I mean, that would be a wonderful case study to see how far it's going to go, because if anybody deserves it right now, I think it would be the people, good people. You know, you go out into rural Oregon, that's red state country. I mean, Oregon is red, except for Portland, which brings the whole thing into a deep blue type of hue. So, yes, that's going to be interesting to see what happens there. And if you want one more piece of good news, ladies and gentlemen, go check out Gregory Hood's article at Amran.com, Stolen Confederate Valor. Jared, even that charlatan who was pretending to be a descendant of the great hero Robert E. Lee, in fact, wasn't one at all. It was just a big grift. So we even get that deliverance this week.
Yes, yes. And the Washington Post was the outfit that unmasked him. Occasionally they get it right.
I was a little bit surprised about that.
Yes.
A little bit surprised that they would do that to him.
That's right. That's
but
right.
Happy.
Well, yes. No, it was just great. But, what's going on in Oregon? You know, the other thing is, when the people who are conservative say to the liberals who are trying to kick them around and run their lives, let us go, they should let us go. And I think some of them will.
Well, we'll see. I would like to see that begin to occurring, and then you go from abstract to concrete in a big way. Well, Jared, it's never too long in between your appearances here on TPC. We look forward to the next one, and hopefully when you come back, we'll have even more good news to discuss. Amran.com, ladies and gentlemen.